the patron saint and art impresario of the Chicano art movement in L.A., Miss Patricia Correa, next on The Culture Catch. Today's show is brought to you by our friends at WebHSP.com. If you have storage dilemmas, they have storage solutions. Whether you're podcasting or just putting together a new audio blog, check out WebHSP.com. Here we are in L.A., Dusty Wright with The Culture Catch. I'm always amazed that I'm able to walk myself into spaces and meet incredibly dynamic, passionate individuals, like the woman next to me who runs one of the coolest galleries I've ever happened upon. Not that I know a lot of the art galleries in L.A. I know a few in New York, but I'm in L.A. and I bump into Patricia Correa.
Correa.
God, I got it right. I got a little accent going.
Yeah, you got it. The twist.
The twist. And, you know, I'm just walking around the room yesterday. You weren't in. And, and I'm looking at the artwork. We have Cesar Martinez, and his work just... I mean, I saw it from the outside. I said, I've got to go into this gallery. And I just spent, like, the next 2 hours hanging out with your assistants talking about the art scene L.A. and the art scene that you've started in your gallery, because you're working with some incredible artists. But more importantly, you've been on the scene a long time, so you've seen
changes.
The permutations, the changes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a big movement in L.A. right now in the art community. It's branched out beyond these boundaries here in the City of Angels.
Correct? It's taken a while.
Yeah.
But I think what happens is there's just so much talent here that it's hard to get past it all. And we have all the art schools here. We don't have all the other amenities that you need kind of to create what happens in the art scene, but we definitely have a lot of the talent out here. And they're just being churned out every semester. So it's interesting to see how the art world as a whole kind of formulates. You know, East versus West, there's always that kind of dialogue. But what I think I found for myself was I always sort of felt it was important to sort of, I don't know why, champion the underdog maybe. I don't think in the beginning saw it that way, but looking back now after 15 years this year, I felt like that it just seemed to happen naturally for me. And I did a radical change about 3 years ago. I showed primarily contemporary, emerging, mid-career artists from Los Angeles or West Coast. And some of my art, because I don't really look at art by gender, by nationality, or that type of... I just feel the artwork is what it is. So that really makes me happy when I hear you say that it's just what caught your eye and it drew you in here, dragged you in here. So that's the bonus right there, even if you knew nothing. You know what I mean? The fact that you do know something is also a bonus, but that you just came in because it talked to you.
And art is so subjective.
Oh, my God.
You know, I hate when people try to objectify art, because you go like, you know, I guess there becomes a point when an artist does become incredibly collectible, well, and you go, when did that switch get flipped?
Or how does that happen?
Or how does it happen?
People ask me that, you know, and what's interesting, and just kind of finishing up what we were talking about as far as the direction of the gallery, I had a couple artists that were Mexican-American or Chicano artists. And when your artists start getting into museum shows and... touring, basically the show starts touring, Smithsonian, Houston, all the big museums, Chicago. As a dealer, you go to these. And I started realizing that there was this whole school of style of artwork out here that nobody was championing at all, and I couldn't understand it. And all these artists are in major museum collections. So I started thinking about why and where that was and how come. And so that's how I made a radical shift.
So perhaps in the past, people would look at the Mexican art experience as maybe just mainly a folk art thing and not as a serious art.
Fine art.
Fine art.
Yeah, as painters.
Painters. These people are talented. They go to school like any other
They have degrees.
Individual, they have degrees, right. You can't label. I think it's really easy for people to do that.
We
look at New York and you say, well, if you're not in New York, you're not a serious artist.
Well, what happens, I think, too, where that dialogue comes from, and, you know, we came back from a trip in Paris because one of our artists was in the current Pompidou show, and what I needed to, it was good, I'm glad I got away, I needed to go away and see it from a further perspective, is that New York gets all the European collectors. We don't quite get them here. They may come here, but unless you have a relationship with them, they may not find you. And secondly, New York has all the art magazines. So the support system there on just print factor alone is huge. I mean, if you open up any art magazines, I think, you know, LA gets 2 or 3 reviews, and New York has 25.
Right.
So it's hard to compete that way. So.
But there is there's the movement up north with Juxtapose, which is a little different art movement.
Which is a great art movement.
I love it personally.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that's exactly what we're talking about. There's sort of art gets sort of boxed in a certain way, and it's hard to get out of that box. And I think you're right. When it came to the Chicano art, people thought of it as more mural, folk art, something people did back in their kitchen or something. I don't know. But when I really realized that, I just said, okay, that's it. And I did a change. And I now specialize in Chicano Mexican American art. And I did that about 3 years ago.
Fantastic.
It blew my other artists away, and it wasn't easy.
Oh,
believe
me,
it wasn't easy. But it was something that just had to be done.
And, yeah, but you had the passion for it, and you saw a need in this marketplace, and now you've become a proponent for,
once again, the underdog.
Yeah. But that's all right.
So I don't know. That must be my underlying mission, I guess.
Well, you're helping to define movements as well. And I think that as someone who curates arts, that's always important, isn't it?
I think it's really important. And I'm not one to say that art should be categorized by your nationality or your background. But I also feel in this particular situation, there has been such major influence from the mural movement that it's kind of hard to ignore that there is sort of a style or a school, a palette even, you could say. And I think the dialogue has changed radically. I mean, when Chicano was such a charged word was back in the 60s, and, you know, we're talking 4 or 5 decades later where a lot of these kids and artists, they don't even relate to that word.
Exactly.
It's been sort of homogenized now as, you know, Mexican-American instead of the political jolt that it was at one time. And so it's funny, when you say Mexican-American, it conjures up something else, and when you say Chicano, it brings on something else. So it's
very
kind of a
point. Yeah.
Cross between the two. And my young, I'd say the artists probably, last 20 years especially, have gotten even more global with the web. So their dialogue's even on a whole other baseline. And I come from an immigrant family, so I kind of have an understanding to what that's about. You know, your parents who don't speak English at home, and, you know, you sort of have this secret thing at home, and yet you're going to school, and there's a whole other interesting persona people just put on you as far as who you are by the color of your skin or whatever. It's really, I found that amazingly interesting, especially more so now being this specialized and this focused. I see it. I'd like to say it's not there, you know, but it's there.
Sure, sure. I mean, you know, these walls, these barriers that get put up have to be brought down.
And,
and you make a good point, though, the generation thing, we're 4 generations removed.
Easy, yeah.
So, you know,
they're like, what do you mean, running the border?
Exactly.
We're Americans.
Yeah, it's like, you know, time to move on. And I think the media, you know, starts to soften its position. You see the infiltration in movies, television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at some of the Chicano actors who have made tremendous inroads in those mediums.
Well, and there's the stereotypical.
How about Vote for Pedro?
Yeah, right.
Napoleon Dynamite, you know?
Well, and there's this typical stereotypes that you think of when you think that way,
think
of them as all being the farm workers, and they're not.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd like to hope that it's a smaller percentage of that than the latter. But that's part of what, you know, our society unfortunately structures, so it's hard to get around that.
Now, as someone who curates the arts, do you notice that in the Miami scene with the Cuban artists? Have they had an easier time to penetrate America's and to spread out the...
I think it's helped. I mean, I think anytime you get a support like that where there's a big art fair like that, and it's going to... And it's definitely different East and West. I mean, there's more Cubans, there's more Puerto Ricans in the East Coast, and we seem to have a little more of that Mexican population, although it's changing. So I would think that it would have to be a big bonus, a big plus for any of the artists from South America in total, Cuba and all the South American countries. So I think Miami's been a great thing. But once again, if you think about it, it's Basel, one of the biggest art fairs, coming to the East Coast. I wonder what would have happened if Basel would have come all the way to LA.
Yeah, yeah, that very good point.
Would have been an interesting concept, and I think art fairs are here that kind of take on a whole different sensibility, and I don't know why. And it could just be that we haven't procured enough big collectors to come out to these art fairs. But it takes a big fair like Basel to bring them out here.
Well, also, I think perhaps there isn't... L.A. is so spread out, as we know.
That, too,
and
yeah.
You can have a scene downtown. You can have a scene which is right here at Bergamon Station,
yeah.
which is
yeah.
you know, just a fraction of...
Of what's going on.
What's going
on.
No,
that's true. That's
New York is centralized, and Chelsea now, Soho was the area. You know, Miami has that central area.
Right, right.
It's got to be rather daunting just to get people to come from one side of town to the other side of town mm-hmm. to a gallery opening.
Oh, yeah. In L.A. especially.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Who wants to drive in traffic? And what a pain. And
yeah,
all
and you
that,
have your established galleries that have already been there for decades, you know, in
that's
Hollywood.
True.
And
but people travel.
Yeah.
I think if you're a real art lover, connoisseur, you'll travel, you'll make the time, you'll make it happen. Because a lot of people, I think, when you live in L.A., you just learn the gray zones, you know, when you can drive, when not to drive. In fact, we do our openings on Saturday for that reason. I mean, I'd love to do them Thursday night, except that I wouldn't cross town at Thursday night at 6 o'clock. No way.
Very good point.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I think why Bergamot's been somewhat successful, because there's very few places you can go in LA and park free and walk around and see 30 fine art contemporary galleries, not just summer gift cards and, you know, little shops, but it's just pure professional contemporary art here. You know, it's not resale, it's not earlier, it's not modern. And I think that's kind of, I think that's what's really made Bergamot work and keep going. Cause
yeah,
now
the
I think
personalities of the galleries.
12 years.
Yeah, 12 years now.
12 years Bergamot's been here.
Wow.
I know.
That's
so,
extraordinary.
Yeah, so I think that's part of it for Bergamot. Although, you know, but like anything, the arts move around. It's kind of like I always say, you have to remember it's a theater, you know, it's like a theater set. So, you know, for a while it'll be downtown, then it'll be, you know, Chinatown, now it's Culver City, and it'll move around, you know, and it does that, which I think is kind of, I think it keeps it interesting. You know, and now the galleries that were here early on, because you had to be invited to be part of Bergamot, are now like older galleries. I was the youngest gallery when we came here, and now I feel like, whoa. But I think you have to also just be a certain person, certain kind of animal to be a gallery. Dealer, owner, gallerist, because there really isn't like a, it's not like you can go study how to become a gallerist. So there's a lot of components you have to put together to figure out how to make it all work and come together.
What were some of those challenges early on for you here at Bergamot? And did you face them, were they more daunting before you moved into this space, or?
Well,
we're talking about the cycles of the art scene anyway.
I think you have to first be aware of what that is. You have to. I never went and worked for another gallery because I had a whole other life before this one in sales and with art and craft primarily. But I definitely decided I was just going to do it on my own and go open my gallery and do my thing. And there's just a lot you have to learn in networking. Right off the top with your critics, with you know, certain schools. And that takes time to figure out if you don't go and work for someone to kind of figure those things out through another person's space. So there were some things for me, I think it took me a little longer because I had to kind of trip on them and figure it out on my own. And definitely championing the underdog is always been harder. You know, and also if, I think there's certain things in advertising that you have to think about. There's traveling you got to think about. There's art fairs you have to think about. And there's a lot of components to that to keep things going. You know, and the web certainly is a great factor.
Sure.
I think the plus about being in Bergamo, well, the hard part about when I was in Venice was because I was in an area that was kind of borderline dangerous, it's hard to get your big collectors to come down there on an ongoing basis. They're too scared or too paranoid or... You know, something might happen, or the car's going to get broken into, or they're going to get robbed. Who knows? But I think with Bergamot, there's sort of this interesting, almost kind of, I hate to even say it, it's too clean. It's too Disneyland. It's like there's no homeless. There's no trash. You can commute from here to your house and back and never really see the real world.
Yeah, that's
real
the difference
easy.
With L.A., man. It's very segregated. People
very segregated.
That.
It's kind of sad in one way. And I miss my old space because of that, because I was across the street from the liquor store, and so all these hood kids would come in, and, you know, I don't think they'd ever see art if it wasn't that I was happened to be on that little corner.
Right.
So I do miss that sense of community, which you don't get here as much. But what you do get here is that sense of safe. You can come here. You can be a celebrity. Nobody's going to bother you. You can walk around. And you don't have to deal with that whole aspect of homeless or people asking you for help or seeing the real world in that respect. So it's kind of
seeing
a weird...
Seeing the real world. Isn't that a unique concept?
You know, it's sort of a weird... I don't know. Sometimes every now and then I feel like when I go to East LA, it's like, okay, I think I'm seeing something that's the real world.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
Get out of your little weird cocoon. And
well, I think your artists represent that, definitely, that aesthetic, the real world, don't you?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think part of me for, I think choosing this particular route and why is so that people on the West Side, because what happens here is, because it is so spread out, there's that tendency that you don't go to East LA or you don't go to these other neighborhoods. And so a lot of these artists don't get the opportunity to show outside of those neighborhoods. So I felt it was even more so important to bring them over to the West Side, which is certainly the Caucasian white side of town, and give them a chance out here. And so the first 2 years I showed a lot of artists. A lot of them, just to give them that opportunity
just
to show.
Exposure them.
Yeah, just being a real gallery, you know, the real thing, big white walls, do what you want kind of sensibility. I mean, even though they were already relatively established artists, they still hadn't had that opportunity. And so now, with, you know, my gallery director, with Rayanne Robinette, we're going to start narrowing down now which of the artists that we can really represent and take out there and bring it out to the next level, like to Miami or, you know, back to New York and even in Europe, because we're going to be doing a project in Madrid next March, which I'm
fantastic.
Super excited about.
Tell me about that.
It's a project, it's called Casa Encendida. And one of my big collectors is Cheech Marin, and he's got Chicano Visions now that's on the road, and it's going to be at the D. Young this summer.
Fantastic.
Up in San Francisco. So that's exciting because it's going to open with the new building. And I think, too, what's interesting is he's made a huge force in championing these artists out of his own passion of his background. And the collection's so big and it's so beautiful that it's finally on the road and been on the road for 5 years. So to make a long story short, I got together with him and we talked about things, and I just felt, I forgot what we started with, but the importance of
Spain.
It. Oh yeah, so anyways, Spain came to him initially saying, we want to do this Chicano Visions show. And he said, well, that's great, but he didn't have enough artwork because the space is 20,000 square feet.
Luckily for you, you've
and he's got a warehouse, mind you.
Like, does he really?
Oh yeah, yeah. Aside from what's out on, you know, he's just got. He is the true essence of a collector. True
really?
Essence of it. Loves it, buys it, doesn't have to have anywhere to put it. Just it's super support system. You know, we joke he's the Chicano ATM. Because I can't be the only one. So through the project of them wanting to show Chicano art, then they came to the gallery. And it was sort of interesting, they sort of wanted to come to the gallery, didn't get set up, but they were here, same kind of thing like you, where they tripped in and just said, oh, we love the gallery and that's where it's at and we want you to work on the project and otherwise we don't know if we could make it happen from Spain. So I thought, okay, well, this could be fun. It's a lot of work, but this could be interesting. And to make a long story short, it's in March, I want to say towards the middle end of March in 07. It's 9 one-person shows in this huge space, and they're going to ship it all there, ship it all back, ship Rayanne and I and
I'm
Cheech.
There. I'm coming.
Yeah, you have to come.
I'm
and,
coming,
and there's
man.
A panel and everything, and we're all excited because we're getting paid to be on the panel. We're getting paid to fly there, so we're all cracking up going, we're there. Oh, yeah, you have to come. It's going to be really fun. And then from there, we're going to spend a week there with the artist, the exhibition and everything, and then I want to go a week to Berlin.
Oh, nice.
Because Berlin's happening.
Yeah.
It's just all over the place. It's happening. And so I'm starting to think, well, if it's getting hard, Miami, the art fairs right now are like so the thing to be at that it's really hard to get in them unless you're connected, which can happen. But it's just tough. Doing it the freestyle, send your stuff in, isn't going to get me there. And part of why I went to Europe and went to New York was to just double check. Okay, wait a minute. You know, I know we're competitive here. So, yeah, totally reassured me on that
And the
level.
Credibility factor has got to be enormous.
It's
been coming back.
Yeah, and it's just agitating, though, that you can't. So I'm thinking maybe I'll just skip East Coast and go to Europe.
Well, there's got to
be
something.
That's my thinking.
Well, I got to think that there's some, you know, there'd be a space in New York that would love to migrate that show.
Definitely.
Maybe they would downsize it. I don't know, but you know, who knows? Maybe the Whitney would do something.
I don't know. You know, I definitely know I want to go from Spain, though, to Berlin.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to try and go that route.
Right.
And then from there, I mean, we're going to try and get into, you know, Pulse and those shows. And,
sure.
But like I said, it's so competitive right now. Everybody wants to be in them. And then there's galleries that are in them you've never even heard of. So it's kind of like, okay, what's up with that?
Yeah.
So I kind of went, okay. I mean, I've done art fairs. So we just have to kind of do our politicking now. And
well, hopefully this will help a little bit.
Well, I'm hoping. You know, we'll see.
You never know. You get the word out there globally. It catches somebody there.
And sometimes, too, when you send in a packet like that, if people don't have the essence of what your gallery's about, it's hard to do them cold like that, even from curating myself. You miss the whole sensibility of just standing in the room with them. So if there isn't a specific kind of work you send, it's real easy for the work that you send to look like it's something else. And I don't know how else to explain that. Like, it could be like they'd say, oh, well, this is too representational. Or, you know, this is two portraits, too portrait-like. So they're missing the whole dialogue on what's going on here and the subtleties. And when you're being thrown up on a wall like that with thousands of other slides, yeah, it's tough to go in cold. You can't go, it's hard to get in cold.
Well, I mean, you know, we face the same thing just when we pitch what the show is.
Yeah,
until I can get somebody in front of their computer, people are very, you know, insulated in their worlds.
Oh,
and they're
yeah.
afraid to try. You know, podcasting is a very foreign word. Chicano art may be terrifying to a gallery owner.
Oh.
And you know.
Well, it falls
Mexican
under juxtapose as well, because it falls into that kind of tattoo,
right.
graffiti, and
subculture,
that whole world.
It's a subgenre.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Which you and I both love because it's so vital and so organic and real.
And it's very real.
You know, there's no pretense. You know, my husband's very wealthy, and I paint during
well,
the day.
Well, historically, you know, that's another interesting thing. You know, there's all sort of the aristocrat aspect of it that's been there for a long, 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 long time. And so when you start getting this type of visuals or, like, juxtapose, it does become, I think, a little threatening to a certain group of people, maybe.
And plus there's this other element that's happened with how the graffiti artists, the graphic illustrators have infiltrated. You know, we were talking to Gary Baseman about this a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
He said the same thing. They're really, you know, they're finally just starting to accept the fact that artists are multidimensional.
Well, it's an expression.
And you've got to be able to pay the bills, so you have to be multidimensional. You have to be a Renaissance person.
Yeah.
You know, you can do a magazine cover and create a beautiful canvas for gallery wall.
Or graffiti or whatever. Tag your tag. I mean, a lot of taggers come from not having the money to be able to buy the stuff to go out there and do it in the... Well, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them I think could be that we just don't have a place for a lot of these kids to go to be creative and express themselves.
The school systems have shut down.
The
art programs.
All visual arts.
And it's in music.
And music.
Yeah,
I mean, but visual arts for
Very
sure.
Very good point. And I think that's something we need to make people aware of. I think adults grow up and they forget that these young, you know, the kids are already grown up. And if they are privileged, they had the private school and
they
had everything.
That's right.
But if you go to a public school, my kids go to public school.
Oh.
You know,
there is no art.
It's amazing what you face.
Well, we're getting into the haves and the have-nots again, which is exactly what art was a long time ago.
Right.
And I think what's kind of been really cool is that sort of whole subculture has turned that around. And I also think, too, you know, I get a lot of people that come into the gallery and go, oh, gee, you know, you guys are you're happy and you're having a good time. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I am. I love what I do. And, we're enjoying it. And
yeah, you're not all quiet and hush-hush. Can I help you with anything?
Or just all, you know, I don't know, hunkered down and, like, into your little thing and not looking or talking to anybody. I mean, I can see where it'd be safe to have that, we call it sometimes that invisible barrier.
Yeah,
where you sort of sit. Yeah, you sit back here and you just kind of watch it all go on. But I know way back when I lived in New York, I had the means to buy art. And if any one of those people at Mary Boone or, you know, Leo Castelli or any of them would have probably talked to me, I probably would have had a beautiful Basquiat collection.
Oh, yes.
I drove my little 911 SC Porsche down to the gallery openings when I lived in New York. I was cruising.
You had a good salesman job, huh?
So I figured that, when I opened my gallery, I thought, how many people are out there like I was? you're kind of intimidated because, you know, there's this whole air and this whole, you know, aristocracy kind of sense of weirdness. And, you know, everybody sort of seems a little uptight. And I, you know, nobody ever opened that door for me that way, even though I was in the arts and I sold art. But nobody opened that door that it was real, that you could have it, you can own it. And it was certainly in my financial means.
Now, the East Village scene had that for a while, when the East Village Arts and Kenny Scharf and everyone was, you know, opening that up, and Ron English, and there was the storefront galleries. They made it very
accessible. But that came later.
I'm talking
80s.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, about the 80s. So when I opened my gallery, I said, you know what? I want people to feel like they can come in here and they can ask those questions that, you know, I want them to know they can ask questions, period.
Well, also,
whatever they are.
Your art is affordable.
Well,
I saw some of the prices. I was like, wow. You know, that is a very affordable piece of art, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It may not be an artist that I know, but, you know, at the end of the day, that individual,
it's doable.
They have a lot of material in that painting. They've spent money. You know, there's a fair exchange.
We were talking about that earlier. There, people, when you ask me, like, what over the years, what I've learned is that there is a pricing. There is a way to structure pricing. There is a way to look at work from the possibilities of it maybe being collectible. There's no guarantees in anything. I mean, that's like all in hindsight. It's like real estate or anything else, but you have to know your market to understand that. And it's real sketchy, you know, so it's probably one of the most radical ways to lay money down, but historically people have. And I think that's what's kind of interesting is it's important that people learn that. You know, why are things priced the way they are? You know, why is this artist who has a piece bigger than the other artist is less money? You know, so I take a real sort of level of importance to help and educate my collectors, saying, hey, because as a dealer, too, you see a little bit of what's coming down the pike. Like, I know Chicano Visions is going to be here in 08. I know it's going to Chicago. I know when it hits certain cities what it's going to do to that consciousness.
Right.
You know, and apparently every time it shows at these museums, it gets more attendance than any exhibition ever has.
Really?
Which, like, at the Smithsonian, it got more attendance than any one show of this type ever got at the Smithsonian, apparently.
That's fantastic.
And, like, the book sales they have are, like, through the roof.
Right.
Like, through the roof numbers, you know. And it just amazes me. So it tells me that people are interested. But aside from just being interested, you have to kind of step out a little further and educate yourself a little bit. Read up on it. Look in the art mags or look in your, you know, local gallery guide type of magazines and start asking yourself, you know, are they in museum collections? How many years have they been doing this? Are they really dedicated? You know, is it somebody, you know what I'm saying, who is a housewife who's painting, which isn't a bad thing?
No, but, not at all.
But it gives you different criterias of maybe where the seriousness or their level is. Could be more than not. You know, some artists are more, just like all of us, are more fortunate than others. You know what I'm saying? And that they're in a position where they can just paint and not worry about all the other basics. You know, and some galleries. That's
right.
The other interesting thing. You ask yourself in a gallery.
Right.
If you ask the dealers, do they have art degrees?
Go figure. I think people are intimidated, but there's that wall that we talked about earlier.
Most don't.
People
Most
are afraid to ask those questions. I didn't realize that.
Most. I mean, it's like guerrilla style. More than any other business, where can you start a business and have absolutely no degree and no experience?
I'm going to have to ask those tough questions next time I go to a gallery.
I mean, I studied art at the University of Hawaii, no less, but... Like I said, you know my level of where it should be.
But base.
We had the best guest teachers ever who wouldn't come to Hawaii to the art department. But that's something I thought was kind of odd when I first came into this business. I thought, isn't that interesting? There's no real studies for being an art dealer. So you really have to figure it out.
Right.
And very few art dealers are willing to tell you anything. That's another interesting thing. There is no camaraderie.
Oh, gosh.
There's no team.
So competitive, huh?
Yeah, there's no team efforts out there. You might have a one or two gallery friend, maybe, but it's not. It's sort of a very isolated, interesting field. You don't share notes, and then you don't know really if people are telling you the truth anyways, if they really did do well at a fair or not, because, you know, there's all this public image you have to keep. And I just found that intriguing, you know. And where else can you... I mean, I laugh. Like, where else? Somebody said to me once about politicians and dealers, where else can you go burn people and still come right back into your profession again and reopen. Or whatever, take another position in politics.
Oh, my God.
But I started laughing when somebody said that.
You can fail upwards.
Fail upwards.
I love that.
But it's true, if you think about it. Yeah. You know, and one of the dealers here, I remember, he said he went to UH, and I thought, I didn't see you there in the art department. He goes, oh, no, I was an English major. I thought, okay,
right,
that started it. Yeah, that started that thinking for me going, I wonder what else other people have done.
But then, you know, you could look at some of the collectors and say, the collectors have more chops because they've been able to, pick artists
definitely.
Early on. You know?
Some collectors, I think, are way more savvy than a lot of the art dealers because they've been following the art scene a long time. They're putting their money down, so they're really serious about what they're doing.
Right.
Not that an art dealer isn't. So I think that's why you see a lot of art galleries come and go, because there is a lot of little things that you have to learn in a sort of timely manner to survive.
Right.
Or you just got to have a pile of money.
Right.
And then it doesn't matter. You can make all the mistakes you want.
Right. Again, failing upwards. I love that concept.
Yeah, failing upwards. So, you know, I find it, so I think you're going to find it interesting when you do interview dealers. Like, why? How come they got into it? That's always,
that's going to be my first question. Yeah. Do you have a degree in art or an art history or a painting? You know, were you a painter? Or
no, you're going to, you know what I'm saying? And also people who stay in that academia, which I really learned with Rayanne, that also blows my mind. They kind of never leave the books and go see the real thing. So it's kind of a bizarre little world of people that don't communicate a whole lot, but yet are dealing with the most communicative thing there is,
and they're setting the standards and the prices, and they're the gatekeepers for who is shown and who isn't shown.
Uh-huh.
That's extraordinary.
To the ivory towers.
You know what? That's an incredible, insightful.
Just that alone, just thinking about those few basic little simple things about a gallery. And I think a lot of people don't understand what's involved in a gallery either, and that you take artists on and you represent them. You're not like a gift shop or that's the other thing, is a lot of people don't understand there's all different levels of galleries. And it's okay. You can be a gallery that's got prints and you know, posters and maybe even craft, and that's great, but it's a different kind of gallery than that's strictly fine art per se, or showing only painting and sculpture. And I think when people ask me, well, what do? I think, God, I wonder what they think, what kind of gallery I have. You know what I mean? Like when you just say the word gallery or fine art gallery, like, are they thinking of it as, you know, the little green and toad down the way gallery?
If they met you, I don't think they're thinking that, Patricia.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, or do they think of you as one of these big galleries?
Yeah, exactly.
That, you know, it's like the Untouchables, you know, where everything's so out there that you can't even conceive of that. And a lot of that is just the air. I mean, see, even though you feel, so what's interesting is you commented earlier how comfortable you felt and that pieces were priced at affordability. Interesting, because the work can go anywhere from $1,000 or so, depending on the artist and what the work is, up to $60,000, $80,000, $100,000. So again, it's all relevant. You know, it's all subjective on what's affordable.
Exactly.
But what I want people to realize is that if it's something they really love, you know, it's something that they're somehow just drawn to, that it's doable.
Mm-hmm.
That they can actually have original work.
Right.
You know, and actually, if you pay attention and you buy right and buy smart, it's possible that work could actually grow into an investment. But
that's always a bonus.
Those are all throwing of the dice, and you have to learn how to educate yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's also the difference between someone who likes art and someone who's a collector.
Exactly.
You know,
and someone who's
looking,
a dealer.
Yeah.
You know, that you see what's coming, you see the artists that are, you know, really getting there quickly, or, you know, what we call the little darlings, and you see that happening because you're so invested in your business. It's hard not to, I think. But
I've got to ask you this. Is the hardest thing for you to do as a gallery owner, turn away an artist that you feel is almost there but not quite, and or maybe you just don't have the wall space for the upcoming year to squeeze that one more artist? It's going to be brutal.
It is brutal. You know, it's I'm glad I have Rayanne now. No, but she can
She's your foil.
She gets to be the henchman. You know what it is that I think there's a way you can turn people away and help them a little bit. You don't have to be totally ruthless. It's hard, you know. Sometimes artists don't know their boundaries, though, so it's hard not, you know, kind of say, hey, you know, relax. Because we get stalker kind of weirdness as well as, you know what I'm saying, people that are cool. But, yeah, it's really hard. Because they're coming to you, and you know, here they are, their little emotions and all their, you know, their little painting, whatever, on, you know, their heart on this little velvet pillow. And I said, you just want somebody to take out a meat cleaver and just, you know,
sorry, can't use it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, Zach, you're out of here. Right. So I think there's a way to educate the artists.
Right.
And there are organizations that do help the artists, like nonprofit organizations like Gallery 825, who's a nonprofit, or FIG, you know, and they need to, when they're too young for the gallery, even though they want to be here, they need to understand that they have to put that work down before they can get to here. And you know, there's an easy way to tell them that. It's just the problem is there's so many of them that you just can't.
Mm.
That's really more frustrating for me.
Well, there's more people in the world, so I guess there's going to be more artists born into it.
Or, you just can't, you know what I mean? It'd be like you almost want to have a seminar and go, look,
here's
don't do this and try this. And then if you do that, you might stand a chance. But
I get the bigger message is don't give up if you're really an artist.
You can't.
You can't.
It's
if it's
like
in
anything.
You know, if you have that passion, you have to weather those storms. And,
oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, there are people that slip through the cracks that
yeah.
never get that recognition during their lifetime.
I'd say more than not.
More than not.
Yeah. And in fact, a lot of them, and I hate to even use that terminology, but they're kind of like mid-career established where they are collected by some museums, but it never got bigger than that or on an international scale.
So they have to teach art
oh, yeah.
at the school, or they have to do album
artists.
Cover or CD cover designs or whatever.
Very few artists can make it on their artwork alone.
Yeah.
Very few.
Everyone thinks that, you know, you'll be the next Basquiat, but...
But it's like film, you know? I mean, how many superstars? 50?
Yeah. 50 out of how many millions of actors?
And millions of artists.
Yeah.
And that's the hardship a little bit, but it's there, and it can happen. And you don't know, maybe you don't make that top 50, but you can definitely have a beautiful life and lifestyle by doing what is in your heart and what you want to do. So that's doable, you know, but it's hard to become the Ron English or, you know, and it's interesting, I think, too, when you hear where they came from and how they got there, because I'm not sure if it's something that you set out this 5-year mission plan, business plan for.
Some people may, I don't know, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe, you know, I mean, we do
probably
here to
not.
A certain degree, you know, I mean, I have to, but we're on the business side of it, so it would be the natural to do that, but I don't know, you know, some artists might, some artists don't. I just find that they're just doing what they need to do. And those are usually the best artists. They understand the politicking, they understand the protocol, because there is protocol in this business. And once they understand that, then they have a good chance. Until then, that's hard. And it's hard, because getting mad about it isn't, or you gotta go in there and change it. Open up a gallery and make a difference. That's my attitude.
Great answer, Patricia. Well, thank you for being on the Culture Catch. We're gonna do a little video after this.
Okay.
Let's go have some lunch.
Oh, perfect.
like to thank today's sponsor, WebHSP. If you're thinking about launching a website, you need storage. WebHSP has the solutions. Whether it's video or audio podcasting, they can make it work for you. Check out webhsp.com. You've been listening to Dusty Wright of the Culture Catch. We'll see you soon. Converge is the word.